What the world needs now is positivity. Connecting, relating, and being human together is where it's at. Hi there, Honey German, and I know life happens, but trust, you got this. And State Farm got us. It feels good knowing that State Farm agents are there to help you choose the right coverage with great support 24/7. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Locatora Radio is a radiophonic novela,
which is just a very extra way of saying
a podcast.
I'm Dios FM.
And I am Mala Muñoz.
Locatora Radio is your prima's favorite podcast, hosted by us, Mala and Diosa.
We're two IG friends turned podcast partners, breaking down pop culture, feminism, sexual wellness, and offering fresh takes on trending topics through nuanced interviews with up-and-coming Latinx creatives.
Known as Las Locatoras, Las Mamis of Myth and Bullshit, and Las Podcasteras Peligrosas, we were podcasting independently since 2016, but joined iHeartMedia's My Cultura Network in 2022.
This year, we're continuing to share stories from the Latinx community pa todo el mundo.
Welcome to Season 8.
Are you listening?
Hola, hola, locamores. Welcome to Season 8 of Locatora Radio. I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
You're tuning in to capítulo 189.
Last time on Locatora Radio, we played the Amiga Circle card game by We All Grow to help us ring in the new year. Go ahead and tune in and get yourself a copy of the Amiga Circle card game. It's actually really fun.
It's fun. It's cute.
It's really cute. And don't forget to subscribe to Locatora Radio, leave us a review, and share with a friend.
So today we're back in studio for the first time in 2024, and we just have a few episodes left before we wrap Season 8, and we still have so much in store for y'all, for our listeners, with the remainder of our episodes.
So just quick check-in. How are we doing today? How are we feeling today? We rang in the new year in style, first of all.
We did.
Little J-Tree trip.
Yes, we didn't do drugs after all.
No, we didn't.
But we did drink, and we did have fun.
And
we hiked.
We ate. We drank, we hiked, we karaoke'd until we couldn't karaoke anymore.
Yes.
And that's how we rang in 2024.
Yeah, it was lovely. It was wonderful.
It was super fun.
I had a great time. And this is, you know, Monday when we're recording, January 8th. I feel like, okay, yeah, ya empezó el año. Because last week, like, still kind of hibernating. And I'm still hibernating. I'll be hibernating. We're still in winter.
Yes.
I'm still sleeping. I'm still resting. But I do feel like, okay, yeah, we got to get back to work. We got to finish the season. We have other projects we're working on. Like,
yeah.
Here we are. Let's do it. 2024.
Projects we're excited about.
Yes.
Projects that are, like, a long time coming.
Yeah, yeah. There's more in store from Locatora Productions this year. As always,
very much so.
It's exciting to grow and grow each year alongside you, Mala, and alongside our listeners.
Yes, and our audio editor, Stephanie.
Yes.
Who's just been a staple and just helps us to pump these episodes out and make sure they sound good for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we have more folks joining the Locatora team this year. More to come.
More to come. Stay tuned. But today, you know, we wanted to talk about a specific topic because during our last episode, we had a clip that we posted that we created a video clip. If you haven't noticed, we're doing video now.
We're doing clips, y'all. We're on TikTok. We got clips.
We're doing the clips now, okay? Don't tell any of my former audio professors. I actually did text one of them and was like, do not judge me. We're doing the clips. We got to keep up with the times.
We have to.
So here we are. Anyway.
We have to.
The point is, in that clip, we talked about estrangement very briefly, and there was so much engagement from our listeners. Y'all wanted to hear more. And we thought we would make a full episode, produce a full episode about estrangement with the help of a guest. So we do want to preface that this episode is heavy. It's very emotionally taxing. Take a break if you need to. I myself wanted to step out during the interview because it was intense. But I think it's really important that we talk about it. The uncomfortable conversations are really important. They're hard. Be open to this topic. I think, like, as Latinas, we're, like, conditioned to, like, you know, be there for our family through, quote, thick and thin, no matter how we're treated. So this can be a very challenging topic for some people. And for others, it's like, yeah, let's do it. Bring it.
What I appreciate about this topic and Violeta and the conversation and her interview is that this is not focused on, like, fixing a problem. It's not focused on repairing a relationship or bringing folks back together or healing or moving forward. It's just really facing, like, kind of a sad, kind of an ugly thing in the face and just like talking about it and just dealing with it, which is sometimes what you have to do in life. So I think that a lot of folks out there are going to appreciate the interview for the same reason.
Yeah, I think it really makes you reflect, like, some things can't be repaired. Some relationships are beyond repair, and it's how you take care of yourself in that aftermath. So just a little bit about our guest, Violeta Fernandez. She's a Mexican-American licensed clinical social worker and therapist who works with clients in both California and Texas. She supports folks who don't feel safe and supported by their families. She has a project platform called Latinx Estrangement, and she's joining us today to talk about how estrangement shows up in various ways in our communities.
All right. Listeners, today we are actually picking up on a topic that we briefly mentioned in a previous episode. In a clip that we posted to our Instagram reels, we briefly started talking about estrangement in Latinx families, and we saw a lot of comments and engagement and folks really wanting to go further into this topic of estrangement in our Latinx families. So we have the distinct honor of interviewing today Violeta Fernandez, who runs an online platform called Latinx Estrangement. So Violeta, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. Can you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Hi, ladies. Thank you for having me here. Yes, I'm Violeta. My pronouns are she, they, and I am the owner of Latinx Estrangement. I'm also the owner of Together in Estrangement, and I support people who do not feel safe and supported by their families.
Thank you so much for being here today, as Mala mentioned. I want to just get right into it and ask you about the platform that you created called Latinx Estrangement and what inspired you to create that as a platform.
Okay, well, let's see. So what inspired me to create the platform started, one, with my own experience. I've been in no contact with my family for about 5 years, overall 5 years. But it started the day after Christmas in 2018. My parents had ended their relationship with me. And then following that were my brothers, who ended their relationship with me. And so, of course, that encompasses, like, extended family and all that. And so then, come like 2021, at that point, I started therapy, and then that led me into just processing my own family trauma and rebuilding the relationship with myself and my daughter. But at the same time, I had started, I had entered private practice, and I started working and was mentored by Adriana Alejandre. And she was, like, you know, mentoring me and starting my practice. And she said, okay, well, you need to pick a topic and market yourself. And I thought, well, what do I want to focus on? And I should say, you know, I am a mental health therapist, so that's what, you know, my services included was therapy. So I thought, well, I have my experience that I know really well, but I didn't have the language for it. So then that led me to just doing research on adult children who have been abandoned by their parents. And I knew it was, you know, I knew it happened within queer communities, but the reason I was disowned didn't have anything to do with my queer identity. They didn't even know. And so then I narrowed down my research to daughters and then to Latina daughters. And that's where I was just, you know, you go down that rabbit hole and you start just collecting so much information. And then it was just a matter of sharing my story. It was pretty heavy at first, but then more people started relating and commenting. And I was like, wow, there's other daughters too. Daughters that, again, I know it happens within the queer community, but their reasoning had more to do with not meeting the expectations of their family and playing the role that they were assigned as far as like being providers.
I love that. Thanks for giving that context. I have a follow-up question, but before we go any further, can you define what estrangement is for folks, you know, hearing it for the first time or curious? Like, what does estrangement mean?
Sure. So estrangement essentially is the loss of closeness, and that can be emotionally or physically. Typically, you hear about it with married couples, romantic couples. You'll hear about like, oh, so-and-so's estranged husband. But in this case, it's going to be in the context of family. And so that is essentially like the distance that comes about for different reasons. It can be because you have been disowned, like in my case, being disowned and being pushed out of your family. In other cases, it is because, we'll say in this case, like adult children or family members start creating distance, most of the time for a sense of safety. But again, it is that loss of closeness.
I feel like a lot of the conversations that I've seen on the internet involving estrangement and boundary setting have to do with like us as the daughters, you know, setting boundaries or cutting off other family members or parents or godparents, aunts and uncles, older family members. But your story is a little bit different from what I've been seeing in sort of the kind of viral chatter online, in that your parents, and then as you described earlier, your brothers, they ended their relationships with you. And I'm really curious if you would be comfortable in sharing with us, how did your relationships with your parents and your brothers get to that place?
Sure. No, thank you for asking. Well, one is to know that there's been a history of family violence that has been ongoing. And once you start becoming an older teenager, adult, it starts to evolve into emotional and verbal abuse. But so much of it is normalized. So, you know, you just tolerate it. And so then at that time, you know, I'm going to school to become a social worker. And I was, you know, gaining a lot of awareness. My grad program was focused on DV. But even then, like, I still didn't make the connection of what I was currently going through. And so come to 2017, at this point, I started living in LA and I had now that space where they don't have as much access to me. Well, I'm able to create a community of my own outside of my family. And then that's where the discussion of boundaries, I was working in South Central at a community clinic. And it just, you know, I was just learning more and throughout my career. So once my parents really started to talk to me in certain ways, my friends would encourage me like, hey, you don't have to put up with that. You can say something. And I had like really no, I didn't have many like healthy boundaries at that time. And so at some point I was like, I don't like the way you talk to me. And when you grow up with family violence, you say it very carefully. You're not, it's very careful. You approach the topic carefully. So but that was, you know, met with a lot of hostility. And it was, I mean, it was straight up. It was like, I'll talk to you however the fuck I want to talk to you. And so after that, it was just constant chaos and, you know, being told, well, you're not allowed to talk about mental health anymore. And then it just so many things that led up to that. And then when I started questioning my mom's mental health, at that time, she had been diagnosed with cirrhosis. So I started asking questions, so that would be shut down. So then came the holidays. I'm going back home for Christmas. And I was like, I'm not going to be staying with you there. And that just took it to another level. And that was where they perceived me to be picking my friends over them. And it was just this lot of tension building up also with my brother. But mind you, with my brothers, my brothers could go at it with my dad. Like, there's no tomorrow. But my brothers have never been disowned. And so once the day after Christmas, my dad is upset and he sent in a group chat. So the public shaming comes in and he was no longer going to have a relationship with me. So mind you, at that time, that's when you see in a lot of families, alliances are formed. And so at that time, my other brother, you know, he's struggling with his own mental health issues, but women are disposable. So if there's conflict, my brothers have gone down that path as my parents of like, okay, well, you're blocked and I don't want nothing to do with you. And so it really left me, and I think for a lot of people, like, well, shit, am I doing, like, is it me? Am I the problem? But you recognize the patterns. And if it wasn't for therapy reminding me, like, well, you didn't pick this. Or even if I had, there were enough justifiable reasons to create that distance. But for them, I'm a threat to them, because what they know is to control. That is their sense of safety. So me speaking up or just asking questions, that just was not acceptable in my family.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Yeah, what you're saying really resonates. Like the cycle breaker or the disruptor, right, can come in and kind of reexamine and look at the family structure, and then the family doesn't like that. And
no, they don't.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of examples I can think of in my own family where like alliances form or you know, someone doesn't like what the other said, and it can escalate very quickly. So I want to thank you also for sharing your story and, you know, being vulnerable with us today. And following up about specifically the Latinx community, I saw on Instagram that you wrote in a graphic about family estrangement in our community is diverse, personal, and ambiguous. Can you talk about that more, and why do you describe it this way in the Latinx community?
Sure. Well, you know, it's kind of like with what Mala said. It's like, even though I've been disowned, I would say there's so many that they're the ones having to be more intentional with creating distance. But I always remind people, like, that didn't happen overnight. There's been that distance for a while that a lot of them have been experiencing from their families, like being pushed away or rejected or just not being interested in their daughters. But either way, it's like sometimes it's just more intentional when you're saying, hey, I'm not coming over for Christmas or for your birthday. And then there's also some who are going to stay in contact with their families, but they have, you know, their boundaries. And that's what we call low contact versus no contact. Low contact is more the emotional estrangement. where you're not sharing personal details about your life. It's pretty superficial. It is just, I always say, bare minimum. And then with the no contact, that can be off and on, but there's definitely less physical access to someone, along, of course, with the emotional. So it's diverse and the reasons vary. They can be anything from, in some cases, sure, it's a history of violence. In some cases, it's, we'll say, migration, and combine that with parents not having the skills and resources to build a connection with their children. So it's not as intentional, the neglect. And then in some cases, it may be that families have cognitive impairments. They may have mental illnesses that don't allow them to understand how to connect with their children or other family members. And it's ambiguous as well, because, for instance, kind of think about the silent treatment. You know, you have a lot of parents that are like, well, you can come over. The thing is they're not welcoming you home. And so it's very, that indifference is very hard. It's subtle. It's very hard to identify. And then you have the push-pull, where you have families that are really, they're rejecting you. But then at the same time, they're saying, oh, it wasn't that serious, let it go. And then they go back to this cycle, that, you know, the typical cycle of violence, where they then will shower you with affection and support. So that's why it is, it can be confusing, and it just really is unique to each person. It can feel lonely, but there are definitely so many of us that go through it.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling, and it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura Podcast Network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows, wherever you listen to podcasts.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I am listening to your own story, and it makes me think of like the family unit as this place where you have access to resources, right? And support, like not just love or relationships, but like love is a resource in some ways, you know, or like the family home, or, you know, like a financial safety net or the social safety net that comes with being part of a family. And I'm wondering if, in a case like yours, is there an element of family estrangement where it's almost like you're not going to play by our rules? We're cutting you off from the resource That is the family. Yeah. And how resources kind of play into estrangement, or like estrangement as punishment in that way.
Oh, definitely. There is the financial abuse. And so that's why, honestly, that's one reason why a lot of people do stay in touch with their families, is the need for resources. And we'll say, like in California, the housing crisis, I've had clients that live with families and they don't talk to each other. You also have the need for childcare, transportation, and in some cases, you're also the financial provider, or you're the caregiver, or you work for the business, but it's this emotional abuse that's going on where you don't feel comfortable like stepping away. And so there's this constant threat that they're going to withhold from you. And for, we'll say, in the queer community, especially if you're trans, if that's your only access to healthcare and housing, to step away from that is going to be a huge loss. So yes, there's this constant withholding of affection and resources. And I would say the more independent you are, it'll typically be more emotional resources, right? The affection and support. But when you are in need for physical resources, there's definitely constantly threatening to withhold that. And in that case, my dad did do that. When I said I want to move to California, well, he was going to take the car away. And that happens quite a bit. And mind you, I was paying for this car. They just signed it, but I was paying for it. So, yeah, there is constantly that threat.
Right. Anywhere there's a foothold to take some of that power back. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And once my mom passed, so while I'm no contact, my mom passed away. And then it was like, well, or when he ended his relationship with me, it's like, you're not going to be in the inheritance. I didn't even, honestly, it wasn't even a thought for me. But because my dad had worked so hard to get out of poverty, he knew the importance of that. But for me, it was the last thing on my mind. But I think with families, when they're trying to hurt you, they will use whatever. And in some cases, again, like him, don't come to my funeral. Like, they're telling you, even in death, I don't want nothing to do with you. So, yeah.
That is dramatic.
It's intense.
Don't even come to my funeral.
It's intense. Yeah. It's severe.
It's severe. It's painful. You know, oh, man, as I'm listening to you, I'm like, oh, maybe I wasn't ready for this. But here we are. Mm-hmm. I think, like, as a community, we've been practicing estrangement, right? And that's, I think, one of the reasons that the clip that we shared from our last episode resonated with a lot of people, is that estrangement is nothing new for us. And that's something that you've said. Estrangement is nothing new for the Latinx community. Maybe we just don't call it that. So can you expand on what you mean by that?
Sure. Yeah. And I saw that clip, and typically, I mean, we don't use estrangement. To me, I always thought like that was a super white term. And typically we just say it's like, we don't talk, or mm-hmm. I don't fuck with them, or, you know, I'm not that close to them, or they just, I don't have a relationship with them. So it's pretty much that. There's not, again, we're just not that close. Or sometimes I used to say, oh, my mom, she's just really difficult. So with that term, it's not one that I used a lot, but I know people are becoming more familiar with it as they have more access to language and support in the digital community. But when we look at our families and communities, I mean, when I looked at history, I remember my mom saying how her mom disowned her when she got married. And I know there's been many women in the family. I was a teen mom. I was disowned, but I know I wasn't the first. There's been tías. I had a tía that as a little girl, she was thrown in the trash. And there's a lot of trauma of violence against women where they're being discarded. We see even in other communities, daughters being killed, and none of that happens overnight. So there's been this, all of these steps leading up to that where people are not talking. And I tell people, look, the likelihood that your parents have healthy relationships with friends, it's pretty low. And I know my mom didn't have any friends. So it's just to remind you that you're not the problem. This has been going on because a lot of people feel guilty about creating distance. I'm like, boo, boo, you're not the first. So,
is there a comparable phrase in Spanish to describe this phenomenon that is estrangement?
The thing I can only think of, no estamos cercanos.
Okay.
There's alejamiento familiar.
Yeah.
Okay.
But because I don't, my Spanish isn't up to par, I haven't been able to really communicate like my content in Spanish to where I'm super familiar. But when I do some research, those are the two things that the two terms that tend to come up.
I'm processing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, because one of the reasons this came up in our last episode is my therapist and I have also been talking about, you know, I think it's really challenging for Latina daughters to create boundaries. We've talked about that since the inception of Locatora Radio. Latinas are not given agency. Our mothers refuse to see us as our own people, right? We're extensions of them. And that's a general statement, of course, right? But I think it's really challenging, especially when you have aging parents, to like set those boundaries and create distance and create healthy boundaries and limit, you know, contact with certain people. And so that really resonates with me. And something that you've also advised people on or created content about is like safety and exit plans. And I listened to another podcast where they talked about this during the holidays, right? Gearing up for the holidays, like have your safety exit plans. But for Latinos, like that could also look different. For the Latinx community, that could look different having like the safety exit plan. So how do you advise your clients or to anyone listening, like how can they create their own plans?
Yeah, so the safety and exit plans, again, they're unique for everybody's situation. And I remind people, like, you know your family better than I do. So you adjust as needed. And it's reminding them the flexibility. It's reminding them to practice before implementing it. So even with slow boundaries. But one, it's their comfort level. You know, while I had the privilege of saying, I don't like the way you talk to me. And I think you see that a lot on social media as people, oh, just say no, or just say, that is not easy when there's a history of family violence. So my clients and I will come up with just ideas as far as like what to say, when to say it, and sometimes even getting creative. It just depends on one, do you rely on them for support? That's a big one, especially like physical resources. Your boundaries are going to look so different from someone who has the privilege of not living with them or not relying on them for support. And then the second thing is, okay, what is their comfort level? Not everybody wants to go no contact. Not everybody wants to decline that invitation or step away from their role as a provider in the family. So it's finding what they're comfortable with and building from there. And I also remind them is you're testing the waters. And this is where I bring in like inner child healing is explore, see what feels good to you. And again, being flexible and then giving them ideas. You know, sometimes telling them no is a complete sentence. It's not expecting them that they're going to take that and run with it. It's just planting these seeds because a lot of us don't even realize it's an option to limit your time with family or to say no. But with that, it's just reminding them what their options are. Now, on top of that is also building a plan in the event they are met with like really serious hostility. Okay, well, where do you go? What do you do? Who do you go for support? But meanwhile, creating community outside of the family is really important. If they live at home, it is finding ways if there's a family gathering, okay, well, keep moving. Don't just stay in one spot. And Mala, you had one. I really loved it, girl. It was, I'm going to go hang out with the kids.
Oh, yeah. Like, yes. That's my go-to. Like,
I always remember that one. But it's, you know, finding ways to be creative. And we get into that. And that's where they start to feel a sense of agency. Like, I can't control how my family reacts to me. And I don't know if they're ever going to change. But and I'm not ready to step away, like, in my relationships with them, but this is how I want to, you know, try to implement some slow boundaries and build from there. If there are no contact, it's for them, it may be that they're getting these invites during the holidays when their families feel vulnerable. And it's navigating the impulse to reach out right away. Or for them, they may want to actually initiate the reaching out because there's still grief when you're no contact or you don't have a lot of contact with your family. So it's navigating also the emotions. And so learning how to express themselves through different outlets is helpful as you're creating these plans. So anyways, it's different. There's so many layers to it.
Yeah. And you have me thinking now,
Estrangement, in your own experience, in your research, in your work, in the stories you've heard vis-a-vis your platform, is estrangement always permanent? Or can you come back from estrangement? Do people reconnect? Is it temporary sometimes until something else happens? Like, does estrangement tend to be like one and done, we're not talking forever and ever? Or like, how does that tend to work in your experience?
That's a good question. Honestly, people do tend to cycle in and out, off and on. And the reasons for that can be, one, sometimes we need access to a mutual family member. I see a lot of daughters that are not ready. They're ready to, like, I don't want to see my dad anymore, but they want to have access to siblings, to their moms that won't leave their dads, or vice versa. Maybe it's wanting to have contact with their dad, but the dad won't leave the mom. So that'll keep them like coming back. For some parents will adapt. And this is where it's up to you of how many attempts do you want to give them? How many reminders do you want to give them? And I think a lot of times if they see some parents, I swear, they're so unreasonable. A lot of times if they even put half the effort, their children will like still come around and still keep trying with them. And so, but now I will say you're going to tend to have more success with mothers than fathers. Fathers tend to be more absent, but there's still a lot of challenges with mothers just because of typically there's a history of violence that they're not ready to explore with a therapist. So final answer is basically it's off and on. And then again, it still always depends on the situation. Now, I can tell you in some cases, it's a done deal until that parent or family member is aging and close to death. Some people may feel like, well, you know what, let me go see them. But in some cases, no, that ship has sailed. I know for me, look, let me tell you something. My mom has passed away, but we're going to stay no contact until I'm ready. When that will be final, I haven't decided. With my dad, you know, he's getting older. At this time, I'm like, you won't be hearing from me. And even though he ended his relationship, again, they will send out some type of message saying that they want you to go to them. My dad will never come to me, but, you know, in our cultures, the children go to their parents. Their parents do not go to them. So he'll still put out, you know, messages that to imply like, oh, well, you know, I can go. And I know my parents, they want me to go and beg for forgiveness of something I didn't do. But for me, like that ship has sailed. I'm past that. So really it's going to depend on where you're at in life and the experiences you go through to see, is that going to change your mind in trying to reconnect?
Yeah, I love that you talk about this so openly and that you have a platform, you've created a platform to talk about estrangement and the way we show up with our families. Because I feel like, you know, when I look at film and television and Latino, Latine representation, like I see this very, like a very, I can see both, right? But I see like a very positive, like the family's super close. There's a matriarch, there's a patriarch. Everybody forgives each other and loves each other at the end of the day. And that's not realistic for a lot of us, right? A lot of us are estranged or have some type of boundary setting or just dysfunctional, straight up dysfunctional relationship with our families. And so to talk about it so openly, I think is really healing for lots of people.
Yeah, it is. And I think sometimes I forget. And even when I receive messages of what people go through, it's even validating for me, like, okay, I'm not the only one. Because I think most people, I feel like I'm the lucky one. I feel, honestly, a sense of liberation that I don't have to deal with the men in my family and other my enabling tías. But that's not the case for like a lot of my clients and friends who really struggle with the guilt of not showing up in their families and doing the bare minimum. And it's the constant like emotional abuse that they go through. So they share with me a lot of the stress of that. And I feel for them, you know, and it takes courage too. It really does. And it's also, you know, I'm in awe of how much people are learning about themselves and what they're capable of and how they're trying to unlearn what they were led to believe about themselves. And a lot of times is that they weren't really worth much effort.
I can totally hear how like the women that you hear from feel guilt.
That's me right now. I feel the guilt. Yeah.
You know, like stepping away would be causing harm to the people you're stepping away from. So by the same token, I want to bring it back to you. And, you know, you can't speak for your parents and you can't get in their minds and tell us what they think or feel or thought or felt. But do you think that they carry with them any guilt or regret for having put this distance and implemented this estrangement with their daughter?
That's a really good question. And I've thought about that because there's always this threat of what if I die? You know, you better hope I don't die. But I always wonder, what if I die? Mm-hmm. You're not going to feel okay that your only daughter died. I never understand that. With my mom, I don't know, y'all. Like, I really don't know. She never... The last time I heard from her was like maybe a couple of weeks before she passed. But at that point, I couldn't understand what she was saying. Mm. And I don't know, she was just she had a lot of rage and a lot of anger. I don't know if she was going to be able to feel that. And with my dad, this man, he is like the narcissist to the max, like the elite status. And I think for him, even my brothers, it would be more about like, woe is me. Like, oh, I lost a sister, I lost a daughter. I don't think it would be much like the value of my life if something happened to me. Or in general, maybe if nothing happened to me, do I regret not having a relationship with my daughter? I don't think they do feel that. I think they may feel a sense of shame, and that's why they don't tell everybody the truth. But I don't know. I don't think so. And I think if they do, I don't think they have the language for it. I don't think they understand it either.
Those emotions are like buried deep in there. Yeah. They are like, there are no way coming out to the surface.
And like you said, you're the lucky one mm-hmm. in the scenario. You're the lucky one.
You feel that? I feel really lucky.
Yeah, this question is about what Mala just said. You know, in our community, folks don't want to acknowledge that this is also a side, right? It's like, we're such a vibrant, beautiful, diverse community.
Family oriented.
Yeah. But nobody wants to actually talk about, like, there's a lot of dysfunction and a lot of abuse that happens within, and a lot of secrets that happen within our families. Like, why do you think that we don't want to acknowledge this side of our community and our families?
I think a couple reasons come to mind. I think one, the reason our community and families don't want to talk about the dysfunction or the challenges is one, shame. The shame that a lot of people are still trying to recover from, just the intergenerational trauma that our families have gone through, and their relationship with shame is something they don't even like to talk about. And then the other reason I think is because once you start talking about it, now you know more, and it's going to require change. And for a lot of family members, they benefit. I think that we've seen that quote, people benefit from you not having boundaries. And so, like myself and so many, is that when we challenge our families, it's not just that, but it's a whole family system. And to disrupt that will really cause a lot of people to feel uncomfortable. So that's why when people make outcries, people will either react with hostility or they'll at the same time try to cover it up. So the idea of dysfunction is just makes people really uncomfortable from the bubbles that they're in and the access to power and control that they have in their families. And that's why talking about Marianismo is such a big deal, because you have more daughters that have these advanced degrees and businesses, that their tolerance level for the abuse and the BS, it starts to decline. And unfortunately, I still get a lot of people who I can tell they're really resistant to my content. Even community healers that tend to want to focus on forgiveness and Marianismo, and almost like they and I get it. It's different for everybody. I have sometimes they want to use forgiveness. That, hey, go for it. And I'll help them with that. But there's, I think, so many that are saying, no, I want justice for what I've been through. And I don't want to use a tool that's been used in my religious trauma. So talking about it and seeking support for them works better than somebody whose way of coping is more rooted in like Christianity and white supremacy. So there's so many layers to it.
That's a great point. We haven't even talked about religion at all.
It's
here.
So true.
But that's a really great point, the emphasis on forgiveness when someone has clearly harmed you for years, decades, depending on the circumstance, and that's sometimes not, the forgiveness is not there. It's not enough. I don't want to forgive you, actually. I want to cut you off, or whatever that may be for someone.
Right. I always encourage my clients and followers, like, sit in your anger. That's why for me, I will be no contact with my mother in the afterlife, because I want to sit in my anger, because I wasn't allowed to when I was little. That was not an option, you know, to sit there and be angry or be sad. So I encourage, you know, that relationship with anger and rage, and to hopefully use that to fuel change.
Yeah, that's something my therapist tells me, like, what can we learn from anger, right? Instead of stifling it and trying to change it and make it positive, like, what is it actually teaching us and how can it protect us? And I love what you said, how can it fuel us to make a change or be a change?
Oh, definitely, especially in our relationships, because oftentimes our relationships, who we date, the friends, even at work, there's parallels to the relationships we have with family. And so self-doubt tends to creep up quite a bit. So when you really start to examine your relationship with emotions and boundaries with family, you can learn how to make changes in other aspects of life. But see, going back to that question, is why don't families want to talk about it, is because it leads you down to connecting or seeking support outside of the family. And that's where, like, having different values, interests, opinions becomes an issue. So they try to protect that with their framework of values and beliefs that have ideologies rooted in white supremacy. So being a woman and being educated really goes against their idea of what a woman should, how daughters and sisters should behave and how they should present themselves and all that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and telling your story. How can folks connect with you? How can they keep up with your work? Tell us more.
Thank you. So actually, most people can find me on Instagram and TikTok under Latinx Estrangement. And there you'll see my content and support groups that I promote throughout the year. I do have a group coming up at the end of the month, and it's really a post-holiday support group, because I know a lot of people are reflecting on the recent interactions or the loss of family during the holidays. And then throughout, from there, it's just different events that will come up. That's pretty much it. I offer individual therapy and coaching.
Well, Violeta, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. And like Diosa said, sharing your story and being so vulnerable, this is the side of our culture that I think we don't talk about or celebrate as much.
Nobody wants to talk about it.
Yeah, but it's really important to share these narratives. So thank you again.
Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, is executive produced and hosted by me, Mala Munoz, and Diosa Femme.
Story editing by me, Diosa.
Audio editing by Stephanie Franco.
Thank you to our locamores, our listeners, for all of your support.
Besitos! Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela.
Hosted by Mala Munoz
and Diosa Femme.
Take us to your network.
diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
What the world needs now is positivity. Connecting, relating, and being human together is where it's at. Hi there, Honey German, and I know life happens, but trust, you got this. And State Farm got us. It feels good knowing that State Farm agents are there to help you choose the right coverage with great support 24/7. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.